We've just started 6th canto. Parikshit Maharaj has expressed his deep concern about those suffering in hell. He wants to know how they can escape such hellish suffering. Having committed those activities which warrant suffering in hell, is there anything they can go, they can do to escape it? मर्डर तो कर दिया अभी, तो कुछ कर सकता है क्या? मतलब यू नो, फांसी से बचने के लिए, यू नो, इज देयर समथिंग दैट ही कैन डू नाउ टू एस्केप डेथ पेनल्टी? सो व्हाट कैन बी डन? सो दिस इज व्हाट परीक्षित महाराज इज आस्किंग शुकदेव गोस्वामी. Shukadeva Goswami is now going to test Parikshit Maharaj. Let's see what he has to say. Shri Shuka Uvacha Na Ched Ihavai Na Ched Ihaiva Pachatim Yatam Hasah Kridasya Kuryan Mana Upta Pani Bihi Dhruvam Savai Pretya Narakanu Paiti Yekitame Bhavatastigmayatana. If a person does not perform atonement, apachitim means karmakandi atonement. Remember this word because this will keep returning again and again. Apachitim means atonement. If a person does not perform atonement for sins committed by his mind, words or actions, Savai Dhruvam Upaiti, he will certainly attain Naraka, those hells. What is the nature of those hells? Tikmayatana, which inflict intense pain, pretya, after death. Yeme Bhavataha Kirtita, which I have described in the previous chapter to you already. So, he says that atonement is the only way. Atonement here means karmakandiya prayaschitta. Only that is the only way. If they have not done it, it's not possible. Srila Vishnu Jagadagur mentions, testing the proficiency of his student Parikshit to understand his opinion on the matter, Shukadev first gives the process of atonement according to karma in two verses. If one does not perform atonement for sins committed by mind, words or actions, singly or together, one attains hell with terrible pain. Purport.
Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions that although Maharaj Parikshit was a pure devotee, Shukadeva Goswami did not immediately speak to him about the strength of devotional service. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, माम चयो विचारेण भक्ति योगेन सेवते सगुणान संप्रीतयतां ब्रह्मभूवाय कल्पते. Devotional service is so strong that if one fully surrenders to Krishna and takes fully to his devotional service, the reactions of his sinful life immediately stop. Elsewhere in the Gita, attainment 66, Lord Krishna urges that one give up all other duties and surrender to him. And he promises, Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Mokshayishyami, I shall free you from all sinful reactions and give you liberation. Therefore, in response to the inquiries of Parikshit Maharaj, Shukadeva Goswami, his guru, could have immediately explained the principle of bhakti. But to test Parikshit Maharaj's intelligence, he first prescribed atonement according to karma kanda, the path of fruitive activities. For karma kanda, there are 80 authorized scriptures such as Manu Samhita.
80.
Such as Manu Samhita, which
liberal,
are known.
Liberal Vedas.
Such as Manu Samhita, which are known as Dharma Shastras. In these scriptures, one is advised to counteract his sinful acts by performing other types of fruitive action. This was a path first recommended by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit. And actually, it is a fact that one who does not take to devotional service must follow the decision of these scriptures by performing pious acts to counteract his impious acts. This is known as atonement.
Yeah, so these Dharma Shastras are there which talk about these kinds of atonement. But should devotees know Dharma Shastras? No, not necessarily. I mean, if they have already known Dharma Shastras, then nothing wrong about it. I mean, good only. Because if they have known and followed it, then bhakti has to do very little work to offset, nullify those unnecessary sinful impressions. But if they have not followed Dharma Shastras, should they now follow Dharma Shastras to nullify it? No. It is like telling that, okay, if someone has wasted away their childhood, let's say they didn't get to grow with their parents, so that person did not get proper nourishment like Cerelac, Farex. So now that he has grown up, he seems little malnourished. Should he eat Cerelac, Farex now? No, eat nourishing food right now. I mean, that's the only solution. So therefore, one should not think that first follow the Dharma Shastras, then follow the Bhakti Shastras. No. Like Prabhupada does speak about Dharma Shastras in the purport, but nowhere does he recommend that devotees read Dharma Shastras. That is not needed. So they should study their Bhakti Shastras and follow the Bhakti Shastras properly. That's what this whole episode, again and again, Shukadeva Goswami will keep on hammering, the Vishnudutas will keep on hammering the Yamadutas, and they will look for some respite, and Yamaraj will hammer the same thing again. He would mention the same thing. Their argument would be, Ajamil didn't perform any prayaschitta. He said, you fools, you know, why does he have to perform? Don't you know, you should be knowing the glories of the holy name. You know, there is no need for doing all that, like that he would mention. Anyway, that's coming up. But for now, Shukadeva Goswami has told, no atonement, he has to suffer in hell. That is the only solution, like that he says. And Prabhupada in the purport clarifies that these atonements are mentioned in the Dharma Shastras. Don't search for it in Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita, you will not get it. Tasmat puraivash viha papa nishkritau yadeta mrityor avipadyatatmana doshasya drishtva guru lagavam yata vishak chikitseta rujam nidanavit. Tasmat, therefore, iha, in this material world, mrityoho pura, before death, ashu yateta, one should sincerely strive for what? Papa nishkritau, to destroy the sinful reactions. Avipadyata atmana, while the body is not afflicted. Because once the body is afflicted, then they won't be able to do the difficult processes that they may recommend. Yata bishak rujam nidanavit. Just bishak means a doctor. Just as a doctor, rujam nidanavit means who knows the cause of disease. Doshasya guru lagavam drishtva. Guru is severity, lagavam is mildness. Seeing how severe or mild the disease is, chikitseta, he appropriately suggests a treatment. So, in this way, the Dharma Shastras suggest severe or mild atonements based on the severity of the sin that has been committed. So the sinful person should take guidance of the Dharma Shastras and the Guru who might teach the Dharma Shastra and appropriately perform atonements. This is the solution. Like that Shukadeva Goswami has presented now. Srila Vishnachakaya Thakur mentions, before death, quickly one should do this, because otherwise after death you will go to hell. Otherwise, if there is much delay, one must perform double the atonement, because the condition will be twice as serious. One should do this while the body is unafflicted. When the body is diseased, it is impossible to perform atonements. One should search out an expert in Dharma Shastra who can decide what should be done, just as one approaches a doctor who can see the seriousness or insignificance of a disease and accordingly recommend a medicine. Like that. You know? Like Kala Sarpa Yagya. Oh, they do it for what? Some ancestral dosha or something like that. Yeah, maybe something like that. Narayana Nagabali. What is that?
Nowadays they have the traditional
way. Put what? Some snake also you put. They put in the yagya. No. Then what is Nagabali?
Those are killed. Snakes.
Hey, you are speculating.
When my father kills any snake, in 1, 3, 4, after that he goes to Nasi and he does.
Nay, but why he kills snakes?
Because in that very space, many snakes keep coming.
Uh-huh.
So he kills.
Uh-huh.
And he understands how many snakes are killed.
You understood, na? That's all.
I don't know whether.
Okay. For his understanding, it's fine. That's what, na? Dharma Shastra. This must be according to. No, not speculation. They are doing means they know why it is done. No? Let's assume. I am not. Yeah, that's what. That's what he was clarifying your curiosity. I also don't know much. Modern day astrologers are more or less like experts in Dharma Shastra, as you can say. And that's what they may recommend. Shani ka jap karo. 5 lakh times you can. Can I take a look at this one?
He went to Arambi.
He went to where?
Arambi.
Where is
he?
Close to Dehu.
There he made some Brahmana.
The
Brahmana told him to chant this mantra 5 lakh times. After Sati was
there.
Then he went home and started doing it. It was very difficult mantra, also 5 lakh, too much. Again he went back. Prasad told him, you pay me some Lakshmi, I will make some people. I'll bring them, they'll chant for you. Now this person, your brother, comes back to devotee and asks, he chanting mantra.
Aapne shaadi ka poocha.
Within devotees, some astrologers, they understand that they are what is safe. So they recommend devotional atonement. Like
Devotional atonement according to Bhagavatam is Mahamantra only.
But still they recommend like you go to three, four places there, Tirupati, Pandharpur, you go to these three places, within this period you have to go and chant this. Together, I was observing that the atonement, because seeing the category of the devotees, they were giving you devotional atonement.
See, I don't know. Let's see what if this Ajamil section, if you want to know anything about atonement, whether it is recommended or not, Ajamil section is the section to read. And the only atonement that Bhagavatam gives is the holy name only.
As a principle, a sinful action cannot be counteracted by a pious action.
Prayaschitta is not a pious action. Prayaschitta is almost like you are experiencing the reaction only. Yeah, that way it is counteracting. Correct. So one should search out an expert in Dharma Shastra who can decide what should be done, just as one approaches a doctor who can see the seriousness or insignificance of a disease. So actually, when we discussed about this prayaschitta, Rupa Goswami clearly says, if prayaschittam tu na uchitam iti Vaishnava Shastranam Rahasyam Tadvidam Matam, he says. If somehow or other one commits a sinful activity, then one should not resort to Karmakandiya kinds of atonement. Because there is a science behind it. Because the moment one takes up to devotional service, his life is not under the realm of karma. But the whole Jyotish Shastra and these Dharma Shastras are their whole understanding, or the scope of their scope is in a person whose life is still controlled by karma. So karma means what? How karma controls? How does this law of karma exert its control over that person? Through various planets, demigods, they are called as karma sachiva. They carry the karma. So therefore, there are, mantras and recommendations for chanting Shani and all of them. Because they are really controlling the life of that person. Because of a particular activity, particular planet's position got changed and whatever. So, but now once someone has taken shelter of Krishna, he can move those like pawns here and there, and they may not be directly even controlling the life of a devotee. So therefore, prayaschitta is, you are not addressing the cause. They are not the cause. You have misidentified the cause, actually. So therefore, it's not, while they are not the cause, what will your prayaschitta to pacify Shani will do? Shani is not causing your problem. So therefore, a devotee should understand that that Krishna is under control, and therefore he should worship Krishna only. That's why Prabhupada, in any of his purports, has he ever spoken about going to an astrologer for resolving any issue. I mean, if it was important, at least once he should have mentioned in his talks and anything. The only thing Prabhupada, they quote is, Prabhupada once, an astrologer came and Prabhupada asked his students to show their hands to the astrologer or something like that. Leave his body like that. Yeah, certain things, but then that does not mean Prabhupada never travelled on a Thursday also. He did travel. Sometimes he may follow it also. Because there are some times during the day which are not considered very auspicious. Even though we know that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is all powerful and He can purify everything. Om apavitra pavitrova sarvavastan gato bivaya smaret pundarikaksham sabahya pyantrash. But that does not mean that a devotee offers everything inauspicious to the Lord with the understanding that He will purify everything. Just like the Lord can accept any impure ingredients also, but as a devotee we do not offer anything impure. So in that way one may Prabhupada, this is my understanding, this is my, you can say, guess, that why offer something inauspicious, whether it is an ingredient or time, to the Supreme Lord in that mood? Not that the time is so inauspicious that even Krishna cannot do anything to offset it, not in that understanding. So Prabhupada never wrote it as an injunction for his devotee in any of the book that on a Thursday one should be careful not to. Never ever he did that. Or in any of the Vaishnava books it is not mentioned that on Thursdays you should not travel or start a nothing. So something Prabhupada followed, maybe. I don't know why he followed, maybe. He didn't clarify.
Like how Swami Maharaj also does many seminars on this kind of level. So what is his opinion about devotees going to Ashram?
I don't know. Maybe he knows that devotees will anyway go to astrologer, so so I don't know. Maybe I'll have to discuss with Maharaj. We can discuss. I don't know. You can pass the mic.
About this, even Prabhupada, I just happened to read that in last times also when Prabhupada used to ask many times, like you say, what is Nash? But later when time came, Prabhupada also rejected later that, okay, whatever it may be, we'll just go ahead. So he never fully depend, because it was, I think he was wanting to pacify, because so many disciples were there, just to make sure that. And another thing I just heard in somewhere in Radhana Swami Maharaj, one devotee was asking, Maharaj, should we, like sometimes this has to be in this direction, Vastu Shastras, so should we strictly follow? Then I think Maharaj is there that if it helping you to serve better, then it's okay, but it should not be like we'll follow this only. If while serving it is helping you to serve better, then that is okay, like that.
See, certain directions may be favorable. Like even if you read Yamuna Mataji's book, she wanted to construct a house which was perfectly vastu compliant. In the second part of her book, they were making a, in Sharanagati form, they were constructing a straw bale construction. And she wanted to ensure that it was vastu compliant. So, I mean, the way I understand it is, according to Vedic science, something is considered auspicious and pure. Why not offer something very auspicious and pure for the Supreme Lord? Because, as far as I understand, she considered that house as Radha Vanvihari's house. And she considered herself as the servant of Radha Vanvihari. So when you construct a temple, you definitely have to consider Vastu. Not, we don't say that the Lord is all powerful, he will neutralize everything. But you are constructing something for the house, why not follow the rules which are meant for constructing a temple, if it is possible. Otherwise, Prabhupada even agreed for some kind of church or some even postmortem area to be used as. But when there is an opportunity to construct a temple, definitely certain those considerations were considered. So the point is, we have to see, you know, when you are doing it for the Lord, why not give him something which is considered according to the Vedic standards as something good, just like you would offer the best fruit, best vegetable, best foodstuffs, best dress to the Supreme Lord. Why not give him a perfectly constructed house? And Vastu is not just this thing, you know, from which direction the air comes, so that it, you know, which direction sunlight comes, so that it is, it gives the best experience for the people who are staying there. So like that, you know, if the direction in which the air comes, that where you have your kitchen, then the air will come and obstruct the chula. Lot of practical considerations there. So ideally, according to that kind of an architecture where a kitchen should be there, if you have your washroom, it may not be very appropriate. Especially for the Lord, why not construct house in his house in a way that is, that would make him feel very comfortable, like that. But once when Janva Mataji's daughter Shamsundari Mataji, when she passed away, in her memorial, you have read that book? A very wonderful, very inspiring book. In that, someone told in that memorial that, I told Janava Mataji that your house is not Vastu compliant, but she would not listen. So, if only that Vastu dosha would have been rectified, we would have Shamsundari with us now. Maharaj became furious. He would not agree with that kind of, a devotee is not punished or because the house was not Vastu compliant. Now Krishna's plan is there and Krishna's plan is being executed. So in the next day, Maharaj did not say anything at that time. Next day Bhagavatam class, he just hammered this point so that people understand very clearly that, you know, devotee's suffering is not due to, you know, non-compliance of Vastu and things like that. But having said that, in constructing a temple, we take those considerations because we want to give a very fit house for Krishna to stay. And when, so therefore when when Yamuna Mataji was constructing her house, she was not thinking that she was constructing her house, she was constructing temple for Radhavan Vihari. Therefore, she wanted to give Radhavan Vihari a very vastu compliant, comfortable house. That is perfect.
Follow it for the sake of assisting in their spiritual practice. That is all right, but
correct.
They should not feel that it is dependent or like, because in this material world there is a material side to everything also. Like that is going to affect. For
correct.
Example, in this case, if the vastu is such that it affects the health, like we say the air and this and that. If again and again somebody is becoming sick, it may happen because of this kind of doshas. So for that matter, this can be taken.
Like someone says, look, the room in which you are living, your living room has, you are constructed in such a way that it blocks the sunlight. There is no sunlight, and throughout the day you are at home. So you need a more well lit room. You should be living in a more well lit room. Fine. Yeah, vastu is that kind of an, it's more of an architectural this thing. Okay. But one should not think that one's devotional service depends on that. One's health or certain things maybe to some extent. But one should be more concerned that my devotional service is not going on nicely. We are not denying that these things don't work or do work. But we should be more concerned about whether we are carefully chanting the holy name, we are taking association seriously, and we are carefully avoiding the offenses. While we can do all these things, our focus should be on our prime things. Like Radhesham Prabhu once mentioned, "Arey, you go to allopathy or you go to Ayurveda, but when you are discussing, discuss Krishna Katha. Do whatever, what I heard, maybe in other instance he might have spoken something, that you do whatever medication is needed, do the needful to take care of the body, but when you are discussing, don't keep on discussing about those things, keep discussing about Krishna Katha." That's what, that's the essence. Okay, can someone read? Purport.
The Sarva Shastras, like Madhu Samhita, describe that the man was committed murder in the hand and his own life sacrificed unto him.
Previously, this system was followed all over the world, but since people are becoming atheists, they are stopping capital punishment. This is not wise. Herein it is said that a physician who knows how to diagnose a disease prescribes medicine accordingly. If the disease is very serious, the medicine must be strong. The weight of a murderer's sin is very great, and therefore according to Manu Samhita, a murderer must be killed. By killing a murderer, the government shows mercy to him, because if a murderer is not killed in this life, he will be killed and forced to suffer many times in future lives. Since people do not know about the next life and the intricate workings of nature, they manufacture their own laws. But they should properly consult the established injunctions of the Shastras and act accordingly. In India, even today, the Hindu community often takes advice from expert scholars regarding how to counteract sinful activities. In Christianity also, there is a process of confession and atonement. Therefore, atonement is required, and atonement must be undergone according to the gravity of one's sinful acts.
Yeah, if someone is not driven by love, then they should be driven by duty or fear. They can't live a irresponsible life. So if not bhakti, at least if you don't want to follow bhakti shastra, at least follow the dharma shastras. Now, Parikshit Maharaj is going to not accept this, because this is not in line with whatever teachings he has already heard from Shukadeva Goswami. See, if you see, the philosophy of Bhagavatam is very consistent. So if you understand the science, that same thing keeps repeating again and again. So Parikshit Maharaj, because he has very attentively heard, he finds something inconsistent with what he has already heard. Details may keep changing, but the overall essence, Bhagavatam is very, very consistent. And that essence is presented in Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu. So if you have properly understood Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, you will see those very same principles again and again coming up through various principles of various pastimes in Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, Parikshit Maharaj is seeing some inconsistency here based on whatever he has heard and understood. So he is presenting that doubt. Let's see what he has to say. Shri Raja Uvacha Drishtashudrabhyam Yatpapam Janannapyatmano Hitam Karoti Bhuyo Vivashaha Prayas Chittam Atokatam. So he says, Janan Api. You have memorized this verse, right? Most of you know this verse. So he says, Janan Api, even though the Jiva knows, Yat Pabam, that sinful acts, Atmano Ahitam. Atmano for oneself, Ahitam, not beneficial. How did he know? Drishta Shrutabhyam. By sometimes seeing himself and by sometimes hearing. But even though he has known it through seeing and hearing, karoti bhuyo vivashaha. Vivashaha means helplessly. Karoti bhuyo, he again and again performs those same sinful activities helplessly. Prayaschittam ato katam. What is the use of atonement? You see something interesting here. Parikshit Maharaj, after hearing about atonement, the main point that he raises is, even after performing prayaschitta, people commit sinful activities. What is the use of that atonement? But when Shukadeva Goswami presented bhakti as an alternative, Kechit Kevalaya Bhaktya Narayana Parayana Sudurla Agam Dunvanti Katsnyena Niharamiva Bhaskara. But even someone who takes up to Krishna consciousness also may sometime Karoti Bhuyo Vivashaha. He may engage in helplessly committing some sinful activities. So if this was the issue that Parikshit Maharaj had, then for the same reason he must have raised the concern about the process presented by Shukadeva Goswami, but he didn't. Because based on whatever he has previously heard, he understood the nature of bhakti. And the nature of sinful reactions, the nature of the cause of sin that manifests in a devotee, even after taking up to bhakti, he understood the nature of that sinful desire and the potency of the process to actually nullify it. Therefore he doesn't raise an issue. Because here he is raising an issue. Prayaschitta. No. Why? Because even after prayaschitta, people commit sinful reactions, sinful activities. Achha. Theek hai, bhakti. Even after taking up to bhakti, people are not. Can people immediately give up sinful activities? They don't. But he does not raise a concern. kevala bhakti. Why? How do we know? Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana agham dunvanti. So after kevalaya bhakti comes only agham dunvanti, na? So you can't say kevalaya bhakti is performed at a sinless stage. Then what is the meaning of agam dunvanti? Like that. So even prayaschitta, what is the nature of prayaschitta? Agam dunvanti. What is bhakti doing? Agam dunvanti. But he is not raising a concern here. That is why the manifestation of sinful sins in a devotee who has accepted the process and the manifestation of sinful tendencies in a person who has accepted the process of prayaschitta, it's not the same. Because that is the concern he is raising, right? What is the problem that he has with prayaschitta? Because sinful tendencies are still there. So the presence of sinful tendencies in a devotee is different from the presence of sinful tendencies in a person committing prayaschitta. Because his sinful tendencies are on a decline now. And eventually it will go away. Like Prabhupada says, like the fan, and also he says the snake with broken fangs. Durdantendriya kala sarpa patali prutkhata damshtrayati. Like that. Of course, this point will be raised by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur also in one of his purports. He will raise, why didn't Parikshit Maharaj raise an issue here? So, if it was the same, then he must have raised an issue when bhakti was suggested as a solution also. But he does not raise. Like that. Of course, we will discuss this in little more detail when we reach that purport. One of the longest purports Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives. I mean, some 20-page purport or something like that. And generally he has two lines, either no purport, one line purport, two lines purport. This is so long that Prabhupada in one appendix, Prabhupada summarizes Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's comments on that purport. Prabhupada also does not present the whole thing. Prabhupada summarizes Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's comments on that purport. Like that. You see this first chapter only. Towards the end, I think Prabhupada gives appendix to. No, I think maybe second chapter. Or maybe at the end of, I think at the end of somewhere Prabhupada gives an appendix where he summarizes Krishna Chakravarti Thakur's comments on. I'll find out. I think 6.119. Yeah. Okay, anyway, I'll find that out. Simple reactions are washed away. Tendencies are not. It's not considered, it's not a pious act. It is actually the atonement is a reaction only, which you may have to later experience, that you are experiencing now only, because that atonement will have you shelling out some money or energy or something.
More severe.
Correct. Is there.
Even devotees,
offense one is, like you said, after committing offense, immediately we should, if not wait for...
Yeah, yeah. Parikshit criticizes atonement, saying it is unacceptable in two verses. One sees a king punishing a criminal and hears about the punishment in hell and understands that sin is not beneficial. It is seen that a person commits that sin, same sin again, even after doing the atonement. How does atonement destroy sin? When sinful reaction is destroyed, but the root cause of sin, sinful desire, is not destroyed. If the sin has been destroyed, he will not commit sin again. Can someone read that?
In some religious sects, a sinful man goes to a priest to confess his sinful acts and pay a fine. But then he again commits the same sins and returns to confess them again. This is the practice of a professional sinner. Parikshit Maharaj observations indicate that even
this atonement also, you can't say that even a person performing atonement, he can't do committing sin on the strength of the atonement. Then that atonement is not, it won't work for him. He can't think that, अरे अभी मैं ये weekend में जाके वो ये atonement कर लूँगा तो वो हो जाएगा. So Dharmashastra say to commit sin on the strength of the atonement is an offense and the atonement will not work. So it is not in the attitude also. So the point is, it is not in the attitude also. So that attitude, you should not say that a Karmakandi has that attitude. If he has that attitude, even that atonement will not work. What to speak of the holy name? But the process itself, so even if he may not have that attitude, he accidentally committed a sin, being pushed by the vasanas. So he does a prayaschitta to rectify it. So, but Parikshit Maharaj says, no, how is it reasonable? Because even after performing the atonement, he is seen to commit sinful activities. Yeah, again pushed by the vasanas only. So how is that prayaschitta working? That's what is his question. But that same observation is seen in devotees also. Even after taking up devotional service, sometimes they seem to succumb to sinful desires. But interestingly, Parikshit Maharaj does not raise that point again. He should say that same thing now. Kvachin nivartate badrat kvachit charati tatpunaha. Next verse. Because that is his issue against prayaschitta. If that is his issue against prayaschitta, he must have the same issue against bhakti also. Dependent attitude is a prerequisite. Yeah. 629, yeah, correct. 10 pages almost. Yeah. Okay, more ahead.
Parikshit Maharaj observations indicate that even 5,000 years ago, it was the practice of criminals to atone for their crimes, but then commit the same crimes again as if forced to do so.
See, as if forced to do so means what? Forced to do so means you don't want to do it. Because otherwise, that's what Arjuna also has. Atakena prayuktoham papam charati purushaha anichchanapi varshneya. So you can't say that, Prabhu, I was forced to eat feast. No one forced to eat feast, what? Are Prabhu, you know what? Nitai Priya Prabhu today forced me to eat karela, you can say. I don't like karela, but he forced me to eat. But will anyone say, I was forced to eat feast, what can I do? No one says like that. Forced to eat means you don't want to do it, but you are forced. So that's what here Prabhupada is also writing here. Go ahead, please.
Therefore, owing to this practical experience,
Parikshit Maharaj saw that the process of repeatedly sinning and atoning is pointless. Regardless of how many times he is punished, one who is attached to sense enjoyment will commit sinful acts again and again until he is trained to refrain from enjoying his senses. The word vivash is used herein, indicating that even one who does not want to commit sinful acts will be forced to do so by habit.
Same thing Prabhupada is mentioning. Vivashaha means he knows that it is not an appropriate act to perform. So, he is pushed by vasanas to perform.
Parikshit Maharaj therefore considered the process of atonement to have little value for saving one from sinful acts. In the following verse, he further explains his rejection of this process.
Question is that, is it that Parikshit Maharaj understood that this was a test for him? Because the way he is asking is like doubting his guru, like what is the use of atonement? Like just he just now said about atonement, he immediately said it is useless, like that.
No. Yeah, definitely he must have understood, and he is this act of Parikshit Maharaj presenting his case indicates that there is definitely scope for seeking clarification from superiors.
But we say that it has to be little in different mood, that how am I to understand? But he is literally...
See, words do not necessarily convey emotions.
Mm-hmm.
What is presented here is words. It is not conveying emotions.
Mm-hmm.
If it was, then it would have been clarified. So he is not rejecting, but he is seeking clarification. So if he was rejecting, then Shukadeva Goswami would not bother to clarify. So this was clearly understood by both parties as a test, like that. Correct. It depends on the relationship that the person has with the guru. No, you have a very fixed understanding of guru shishya relationship. So there is an element of friendship with the guru also. So guru shishya relationship is not stereotyped actually. And he is definitely seeking a clarification here. He is not rejecting the authority of Shukadeva Goswami. And he understands the mood of the guru also, that he is testing. So otherwise, Bhagavatam would have stopped here. You think Shukadeva Goswami has no other business other than answering challenges. He is not challenging Shukadeva Goswami here. And Shukadeva Goswami can... Many of the things Parikshit Maharaj does not speak, Shukadeva Goswami responds to that unspoken... Yuyam Draloke Batabhuri Bhaga Lokam Punana. Not that. Rajan Patir Gururalam Bhavatam Yadunam. So, did Parikshit Maharaj speak anything? He didn't speak anything. He responded to the unspoken mood of Parikshit Maharaj. Which means, Shukadeva Goswami had the capacity to understand the mood of Parikshit Maharaj. So, here also he understood the mood. So, it was not definitely... Therefore, in any narration, if you see, if Shukadeva Goswami is speaking about the narration of Krishna Katha by Vidura to Maitreya or something like that, after Vidura asks a question, Shukadeva Goswami intervenes. So Vidura Uvacha, and then he asks few things, and before Maitreya Uvacha would come Sri Shuka Uvacha. where he would indicate that, he would say that Maitreya was very happy with the questions asked by Parikshit Maharaj, and with great gladness he actually answered like that. Because the answer is conveying only words, because you are reading only words, but that emotion should also be conveyed if it is relevant. So wherever relevant, the person who is speaking this pastime, he interjects and indicates that he was very happy. Actually he was not very satisfied. Like that he mentions in order to indicate the emotion that is being transacted there. So therefore here there is no Suta Goswami would have interjected and mentioned that it was very Shukadeva Goswami was very disgusted with this challenging attitude of Parikshit Maharaj like that. So he doesn't say anything like that.
Parikshit Maharaj understands the mood, as you said, and as basic thing as something for which Shukadeva Goswami stands for, and if it is rejected very strongly, it gives pleasure to the spiritual master.
Correct.
If it is what would have been mild, it would have been unhappy.
What if Dronacharya was testing Arjuna and Arjuna was very feebly hitting the arrows? Dronacharya would be furious. So if he hits a powerful arrow which, you know, pushes the chariot of Dronacharya a few feet, you know, Dronacharya would feel like, you know, really happy like that. So that kind of a rejection is appreciated, you know. Good point.
All story about it. Just came to my mind.
Yeah.
But very interesting to know. You must have heard from Gaur Gopal Bru's lecture. So one Indian boy came to Srila Prabhupada's one Pandal program. I think it was in Gorakhpur or somewhere. Details I'm missing. And he saw him speaking on the stage and he really liked. But he had some other engagement. So he asked the devotees that where is the Swamiji going next and all. I want to come and after my things are done, I'll come and meet. So they said, I think we are going to Allahabad or like this. So he said, fine, I will come. So he just noted. I don't know, obviously you know this. So then Prabhupada was there. He went to the next place. And he just once saw Prabhupada on stage, I think. So he went to that place and he started, where is Bhaktivedanta Swami? So in that place he saw one sadhu, old sadhu sitting. He said, where is Bhaktivedanta Swami? So this person asked, why do you want to meet him? He said, because I want to accept him as my spiritual master. Why do you want to accept him as spiritual master? Because he knows the true position of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Like he has said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Lord. And then this old person is arguing with him. Who told, where it is written Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Lord? How can you say this? It is not there. So this young boy becomes very upset with him. And he starts arguing. No, how can you say it? Some argumentation keeps on happening between them. And finally, then after some time, few devotees are coming and then they start paying obeisances to this old personality who is actually Srila Prabhupada. And then he said, okay, he is only Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Then Prabhupada is actually tasting him. Like, you know, he knows the truth, but he very strongly defended, and you know, that pleased Prabhupada so much. And he is, His Holiness Radha Govind Swami Maharaj. That young boy is now Radha Govind Swami Maharaj.
Okay, so purport is over? Yeah. Kvachin nivartate badrat, kvachit charati tat punaha. Prayaschittam atopartam manye kunjara shauchavat. Kvachit nivartate abhadrat, after withdrawing from sin, kvachit charati tat punaha. One commits that sin again. Ato, therefore means for this reason. For this reason, manye, I consider, prayas chittam apa artham, atonement is useless. Kunjara shauchavat, it is just like a elephant taking bath. So, I mean, this can be seen in devotees also. Apichet sudurachara bhajate mam ananya bhak. So, but the science is what? Shipram bhavati dharmatma shashvat shantim nigachati. The process is potent. True? So we should understand that here Parikshit Maharaj is not presenting his observation of one sinner performing prayaschitta and then eventually sinned again. It's not one instance. So definitely this must be his observation of all the sinners over a long period of time, how their acceptance of that prayaschitta has not transformed them even little bit. But he must have also observed devotees over a long period of time, even though sinful tendencies existed, but they didn't persist over a long period of time with the same intensity that was there in a Karmakandi. So therefore he did not reject, even though he presented bhakti as the solution. Because the whole basis of rejection of the path of Karmakanda or the path of prayaschitta is persistence of sinful tendencies after accepting the process. So the point is, persistence of sinful tendencies exist even after taking up to bhakti, as Sri Rohinandan Prabhu was mentioning the other day. Ekadesha vartini, bahudesha vartini, prayiki, purna, atyantiki. It goes away in stages, but persistence is there. It is there. The tendency does not go away immediately. And Parikshit Maharaj must have observed it. That is why he does not raise an issue. Otherwise, the sole reason why he is rejecting prayaschitta is sinful tendencies persist. What do you have to say? I think he must have observed it in devotees also. But he knows. He has observed them over a long period of time. That is probably why he does not raise an issue after Kechit Kevalaya Bhakti. 3-4 verses later, 3 verses later he is going to present Kechit Kevalaya Bhaktya Vasudeva Parayana Agham Dunvanti Katsne. Because he must have seen it decreasing over a period of time by the strength of practice. But he must not have seen this happening. Plus, that's why it's not like put the thermometer 102, take crocin. As soon as you gulp crocin, you again put the thermometer and check. It will still be 102 only. So, which means crocin works means one must have seen the efficacy of crocin over a period of few hours, days, like that. So when Parikshit Maharaj is making this statement, he must have observed them over a significantly long period of time and then presented. Similarly, he must have also observed devotees over a significantly long period of time and therefore did not object. That is the point. So therefore, the nature of sinful tendencies that exist in a devotee after they accept the process, and the nature of sinful tendencies existing in those who have not taken up to the practice of pure devotional service is not same. We will see this in detail in one of the purports. In that purport 6-9, I think that is that Stenaha Surapo Mitradu that Brahmaha Guru Talpaga, that verse I think. In that purport he explains. I think it's 8-9 together, right? Stenaha Surapo Mitradu. 9-10. That verse. In that purport he explains all these things in detail, actually. We will discuss it. So That's what he is telling. After withdrawing from sin, one commits the sin again. I therefore think atonement is useless, like an elephant bathing. So, Srila Vishnu Jagadagur writes, sometimes in youth one refrains from sin, but again one commits the sin in old age. Therefore, atonement is useless. The elephant, after bathing, dirties himself with dust. Of course, you know, that is, this is just, this has nothing to do with Siddhanta. This is just my thought process. The elephant, we may see that the elephant is taking bath to get rid of dust. But my guess is probably it takes bath to cool down. Because many analogies of elephant getting into a water after being scorched by summer sun. In this very pastime also it will come. Nidaga Dagda, something like that. By the forest fire, it is scorched, this is like a cool water. After the elephant enters the cool water to cool down. But from an observer's point of view, we take bath to cleanse ourselves. So therefore, when no one would dirty himself after cleansing oneself after. So I think this analogy must be taken from a perceiver's point of view. This is not to indicate an elephant is foolish in that sense. Of course, elephant is foolish only, that, you know, it's a foolish yoni only. But having said that, this act need not necessarily be an indication of its foolishness. Just like we apply some powder after, you know, taking bath, the elephant must be, you know, sprinkling some dirt. Yes. It has nothing to do with. Okay, so can someone read purport? Whoever has the mic, please read.
When Parikshit Maharaj inquired how a human being could free himself from sinful activities so as not to be forced to go to hellish planetary systems after death, Shukdev Goswami answered that the process of counteracting sinful life is atonement. In this way, Shukdev Goswami tested the intelligence of Maharaj Parikshit, who passed the examination by refusing to accept this process as genuine. Now Parikshit Maharaj is expecting another answer from his spiritual master, Shukdev Goswami.
Now Shukdev Goswami is going to answer this question. Okay, I'll just take a 1 minute break. If you want, you can take, but come back in 1 minute.
Yeah,
Give a break, I'll do it.
Okay, so we'll continue. Okay, so we'll continue. Now Sukadeva Goswami is going to answer this question. Shri Badarayani Ruvacha Karmana Karma Nirharo Nahyatyantika Ishyate Avidvat Adhikaritvat Prayas Chittam Vimarshanam. So he agrees with the presentation of Parikshit Maharaj. He says, Karmana Karma Nirharam Nahi Atyantika Ishyate. Atyantika Karma Nirhar. Atyantika means, as we saw, Ekadesha Vartini, Bahudesha Vartini, Praiki, Purna. Atyantika. Atyantika means absolute. Absolute destruction of sin. Karma Nirhara. Atyantika Karma Nirhara Nahi Ishyate is not accomplished by Karmana, by performing atonement. You are right. Why? Avidvat adhikaritvat. Because that is also done out of ignorance. How do you understand this? What is the meaning of this? What is the meaning of atonement also being performed in ignorance? What is the meaning?
Actions were performed.
The actions are performed in modes. In mode of ignorance, he commits a sinful activity. And because he does not want to suffer the reaction for that, in mode of passion or goodness, he commits a prayaschitta. Like that. So therefore he says, prayaschittam vimarshanam. Real atonement is attaining jnana. Yes.
Also that this, because when performing sins, his identity was not
that is also correct. That is also right. He still thinks he is the enjoyer. Yeah. He does not consider himself one's true identity also. And also, his atonement is also inspired by vasanas only. Of course, he is following scriptures for that. Dharma Shastra is following. But the desire to follow Dharma Shastra is inspired by vasana only. Let's see what explanation is given. Yeah. No, this is, of course, Shastriya Shraddha only, but Shastriya Shraddha of a lower order. By presenting a conclusion, Sukadev again tests Parikshit, who has passed the test. The atonement, Karmana, by atonement, there cannot be complete destruction of sin. Atyantika Karma Nirharam Karmana na ishyate. It is not possible. But quick relief because of the condition of the jiva who is qualified by ignorance. Huh? Only some quick relief is possible. Like Hari Bhakti Prabhu was stating, it is just like shifting the load from head to shoulder or one shoulder to another shoulder, like that. Sin appears repeatedly because of the presence of the seed of sin. It is ignorance. The chief atonement is jnana, since jnana removes ignorance. By presenting the opinion of the jnanis, Shukadev again tests Parikshit Maharaj. This is again a test. The mode of atonement. See, here we are confusing with the meaning of the words. Atonement also means, if you check the dictionary meaning of atonement, it means regret or repentance. That mode a devotee should have. But when here the word atonement is used, that the meaning of that word is not the dictionary meaning of atonement. It means karmakandiya prayaschitta. That a devotee need not do.
That is there.
That we should do. That mode definitely a devotee has. Like Bhakti Deth Swami Maharaj, he used to chant like some 50 rounds or something every day, because he felt that he took birth in a very underprivileged birth. Therefore, he has to do additional spiritual activities too. That is there. That is not karmakandiya prayaschitta. But that mood is very favorable mood. We always should want to increase our practice of devotional activities. But here the word atonement is used in a very specific way, not in a generic way. In a generic way, when it is used, definitely a devotee should perform atonements. But when used in this particular way, that atonement is not recommended. Is not recommended for a devotee. Okay, can someone read the purport?
The Guru, Sukhdev Goswami, has examined Parikshit Maharaj, and it appears that the king has passed one phase of the examination by rejecting the process of atonement because it involves fruitive activities.
See, Prabhupada says, he does not say by rejecting the mode of atonement. Prabhupada says by rejecting the process of atonement.
Now, because it involves fruitive activities. Now, Sukhdev Goswami is suggesting the platform of speculative knowledge. Progressing from Karmakand to Jnanakand, he is proposing Prayaschittam Vimarsanam. Real atonement is full knowledge. Vimarsan refers to the cultivation of spiritual speculative knowledge. In Bhagavad Gita, karmis who are lacking in knowledge are compared to asses. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 7.15, Namam duskritino mudha prapadyante naradhama mayaya paharta jnana asuram bhavam ashrita. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of atheistic natures of demons, do not surrender unto me. Thus, karmis who engage in sinful acts and who do not know the true objective of life are called mudhas, asses. Vimarshan, however, is also explained in Bhagavad Gita 15.15, where Krishna says, Vedescha sarver aham eva vedya.
So, vimarshanam means knowledge. So, Prabhupada is clarifying what is true knowledge. So, true knowledge is Vedescha sarver aham eva vedya.
The purpose of Vedic study is to understand Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one studies Vedanta but merely advances somewhat in speculative knowledge and does not understand the Supreme Lord, one remains the same mudha. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 7.19, one attains real knowledge when he understands Krishna and surrenders unto him. Bahunam janmanam ante gyanvan mam prapatyate. To become learned and free from material contamination, therefore one should try to understand Krishna, for thus one is immediately liberated from all pious and impious activities and their reactions.
Okay, we'll continue.
Nashnatah patyam evannam vyadayo bibhavantihi evam niyamakritrajan shanay shemaya kalpate. Na vyadayo abhibhavantihi. Vyadi is disease, abhibhavanti is afflict. Diseases do not afflict. Patyam annam eva ashnatah. One who eats only patya anna, one who eats proper food, he will not be afflicted by diseases. Evam, in the same way, niyamakrit, one who follows the rules of the jnana kanda, shanaihi, gradually, kshemaya kalpate, becomes qualified for jnana. Sorry, niyamakrit here must... then refer to the karma kanda actually. Sorry, the nishkama karma yoga. The rules of varnashram. Because it says he becomes qualified for jnana. But the qualification for jnana is proper execution of nishkama karma yoga and heart being purified by such an execution. So therefore, niyamakrit here should refer to the rules of varnashram performed in a detached way. Okay, he says, he is giving an explanation. Just like for one who is taking proper food, diseases should not afflict him. In the same way, one who follows the rules gradually becomes qualified for jnana. Like that. Yeah.
So, I think before, sorry, 11, yeah, completely counteracting sin is not possible. Real atonement is attaining jnana. So, as Prabhupada, he clarified that this jnana is speculative knowledge. So
this jnana is speculative knowledge.
Okay.
No, speculative knowledge means the path of not exactly mayavad jnana.
This one clear. What
jnana? Not that kind of jnana. He is talking about the path of jnana, jnana yoga.
What path of jnana yoga?
Yeah. Proper knowledge. Proper knowledge only. Yeah. Proper knowledge only, but not devotional knowledge.
It's about the soul and body.
Soul and body and the practice of jnana yoga.
Okay.
As described in the Bhagavad Gita and as described in Kapila Dev's teachings, third canto.
So in purport, Prabhupada mentions jnana as the way Prabhupada takes that real jnana is surrendered.
That he says. And so therefore, if that was the real jnana, then he must not have rejected it. So he started the purport by rejecting it, by indicating that Parikshit is again being tested by Sukadeva Goswami, by presenting speculative knowledge, which means, you know, he must not be talking about Vedesha Sarvai Rahameva Vedyo is not the knowledge that he is talking about. He clarifies like that. This is actually philosophical speculation. Because here this involves intelligence. I am telling this, what we are doing now, this is philosophical speculation. Because there is seeming contradiction here. Prabhupada started the purport by rejecting the path of knowledge. And then he presents Vedesha Sarvair Ahameva Vedyo as the perfection of knowledge. So then we know that because he is going to suggest bhakti subsequently, therefore this must not be the knowledge that Prabhupada rejected in the beginning. Understand, no? This is actually philosophical speculation. Because this is based on the conclusions that Prabhupada has already established elsewhere, and which is established by Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita also elsewhere. And you are trying to reconcile some seeming contradiction by using other references. This is the meaning of philosophical speculation. And what Prabhupada rejects, of course not in this purport, but elsewhere, is mental speculation. Yes.
I always have this confusion, you know, this term speculative knowledge. So the jnani, when Prabhupada is referring to speculative knowledge, it means...
Before you ask the question, I want to just clarify. Prabhupada uses these terminologies in different contexts, in different ways.
Okay.
Sometimes he uses the knowledge of the Mayavadis to be speculative. Sometimes he mentions the materialistic knowledge to be speculative.
Yeah.
And sometimes he describes the path of jnana yoga also to be the path of speculative knowledge. But the word speculative does not have the same connotation in this context.
Okay.
You understand, no?
So, okay.
So the jnana by default, Prabhupada says, path of jnana, the path of knowledge. Because in order to differentiate between the knowledge of bhakti with the knowledge of jnana, he calls it speculative knowledge. But it's not speculative in that sense.
So
it is proper shastric knowledge only.
Exactly.
So therefore, that's why I'm telling, he does not use that word in the same sense in all contexts. So you have to read that whole what is given before, what is given later, and accordingly you have to understand the context.
So here,
that is why in scriptural interpretation, the most important aspect is to understand the context. You get into the words later, first understand the context. That's why Jiva Goswami says. Of course, he quotes from another scripture, I think probably some Nyaya Shastra or something. He says, Purva Abhara Anurodena Konvarto Abhimato Bhavet Iti Adyam Ohanam Tarka Shushka Tarkam Tu Varjayet. He says, how do you interpret Shastras? He says, Purva, what was spoken before, upper, what is spoken later. And who spoke it? To whom did he speak? For what purpose? Is it spoken in jest? Is it spoken in sarcasm? Is it spoken seriously? Is it spoken instructively? Is it spoken suggestively? All those things have to be considered. That is understanding the context. Iti adhyam uhanam tarka. This is the kind of logic that must be used in understanding scriptures or purports also. Shushka tarkam tu varjayet. What is shushka tarka? Take that statement or take that word and come to a conclusion independent of what was spoken before, what was spoken later. So, therefore, many times Prabhupada uses one terminology in multiple ways. So, we have to understand the context in which he is using that word.
In this particular context,
he just refers to the path of Jnana Yoga,
okay,
which is not in that sense speculative.
It is not a devotional thing.
As Prabhupada writes, the path of atonement. So Parikshit Maharaj is rejecting the path of atonement. He is not rejecting the mode of atonement. So this is the path of speculative knowledge, whereas the knowledge itself is not speculative knowledge.
That is like that.
Yeah. Okay. Purport is over. Can someone read the purport? Srila Vishnu Jagadagur writes, but if one is sinful, then his heart is impure. How then can he practice jnana? Because we are talking about what? Destruction of sins. But prerequisite for practice of jnana is what? Purification of heart. And commission of sinful activities indicates impure heart. So how can he practice jnana? He says, that is true, but jnana will give relief from the sin, like atonement. An example is given. Just as sickness does not affect persons who eat proper food, a person who follows the rules of jnana can gradually destroy sins. The preliminary rules, I think, which means one has, you know, there are sometimes prep schools, you know, like for example, in your 11th and 12th, you need not go to a college, you directly go to a coaching class, so they will train you to get into IIT. So, similarly, someone who has already, even though while impure, has already identified liberation as the goal and the path of jnana to be the means, he might be suggested certain preliminary practices to get purified and come to the stage of practice of jnana. That's what this is talking about. Otherwise, the path of jnana itself cannot purify sins. Because jnana means sannyas. So it is the jnana yoga or sannyas is the path practiced by purified souls. The path itself does not purify. It is the path of if you get in, you can't get into IIT and get trained to write JEE exam. You can't get into IIT and then hope that IIT will train you for writing JEE exam. Those who have passed JEE exam only can get into IIT. Right? After you tell, you can also forget it, no problem. It's still called JEE exam only, no? Or something else. Okay. So, can someone read the purport?
One is gradually purified if one cultivates knowledge, even through mental speculation, and strictly follows the regulative principles enjoined in the Shastras and explained.
You see, Prabhupada says mental speculation, and he is talking about enjoined in the Shastras in the same line. Read the purport from the beginning again.
One is gradually purified if one cultivates knowledge even through mental speculation and strictly follows the regulative principles enjoined in the Shastras.
You see, so he uses this speculation in many different ways. But if you take mental speculation means this, philosophical speculation means this, and even when Prabhupada is using these terminologies, he is perfectly aware of what he is using and exactly uses that way. Does not happen that like that. So therefore, you see, in the same sentence, in the same sentence, he is using mental speculation and following scriptures. He is talking about the same person. He is not talking about two different people. You understand? Read the purport again, beginning from the beginning.
One is gradually purified if one cultivates knowledge, even through mental speculation, and strictly follows the regulative principles enjoined in the Shastras and explained in the next verse. Therefore, the platform of jnana, speculative knowledge, is better than platform of karma, fruitive action. There is every chance of falling from the platform of karma to hellish conditions, but on the platform of jnana, one is saved from hellish life, although one is still not completely free from infection. The difficulty is that on the platform of jnana, one thinks that he has been liberated and has become Narayan or Bhagwan. This is another phase of ignorance.
See, this is not necessarily true with a jnana yogi, but Prabhupada generally bunches them all together only, whether you are jnana yogi or a mayavadi, doesn't matter, you know, many times, even though what Sukadeva Goswami is talking about is not mayavad, but Prabhupada, I mean, even though he may not be talking about mayavada, I don't want you to practice this. He says,
this time,
whether it is Brahmavad or Mayavad, you cannot identify.
But hardly someone,
we don't know, we don't want to investigate also, we don't have time for that. We have too much work to complete actually. Both on ourselves and in helping out.
Entire half an hour discussion, but Brahmavadis are, they
because he was the editor, na? Practically all the books, Jayadat Maharaj was the editor. Yeah, go ahead.
ये नैरविन्दाक्ष विमुक्तमानिनास्त्वयस्तभावाद विशुद्धबुद्धय आरुह्य कृच्छेन परं पदं ततः पतन्त्यदो नादृतयुष्मदाङ्ग्रयः. Because of ignorance, one speculatively thinks himself liberated from
material. So here you see, this is Prabhupada's translation again of this Yenya Ravindaksha verse. See how he is translating. Read.
Because of ignorance, one speculatively thinks himself.
One speculatively thinks himself liberated. He is not liberated yet. Most of the times Prabhupada's translation is this, and because that's what the verse also says, vimukta maninaha. He does not call them vimukta. So therefore, what must aruhya krichrena param padam indicate? Their understanding only, not actually reaching. Because if they are vimukta manina, then you can't say aruhya krichrena parampadam should actually refer to Brahma Jyoti. Because in that case, they are not vimukta manina, they are actually vimuktas. So if they are actually vimuktas, then why should the word vimukta manina be used? So if they are vimukta maninas, then their patantyado should also be from their understanding of being liberated. How do we know that? Because they come to perform philosophical, philanthropic acts. So now, if Prabhupada really meant one has fallen down from there and performing philanthropic act, what? How do we know? How do we know whether he has, oh, this, oh, he is very effulgent, that person who is engaged in philanthropic work, right? So, he falls down, therefore Prabhupada writes, he falls down from his position of imagined superiority, which means he did not achieve it only. Because with avishuddha buddhi, you cannot attain Brahmajyoti only. With a disrespectful attitude towards the Supreme Lord, one will not attain. By rejecting the personal form of the Lord, one cannot attain. Therefore, Mayavadis never attain Brahmajyoti. Their aspiration is only Brahmajyoti. They never attain. Because they are rejecting the personal form of the Lord. So who is going to reciprocate to their desires? Because an impersonal entity cannot reciprocate. Only persons can reciprocate. So therefore their desires never get fulfilled. Plus there is no one to reciprocate because they don't believe in any person existing who can reciprocate. Therefore they never... So therefore, I remember Jayadvaita Maharaj, once he told, Maharaj, but Mayavadis go to Brahmajyoti. Maharaj said, no, Mayavadis go to hell. But Maharaj, but Mayavadis are aspiring for Brahmajyoti, they will go to Brahmajyoti, na? No, Mayavadis go to hell. then he asked, no, is it like... the general usage, go to hell. No, Mayavadis literally go to hell. You know, like you say, you know, go to hell. It does not literally mean go to hell. Then you will ask, which hell of the 28, which one you want? So, it just, no, Mayavadis literally go to hell. So, because they reject the personal form of the Lord, so they actually go to hell only. Mogasha, moga karmano, moga jnana vichetasa. Rakshasi masurim chaiva prakritim mohineshwara.
We had discussed even jnana yoga
and ashtanga yoga, a link to bhakti. Yeah. The actual jnana yoga and ashtanga yoga prescribed in the scriptures has the element of bhakti. Element of bhakti means acceptance of personal form of the Lord. That is there. Yeah. They accept personal form.
They accept personal form.
Not only do they accept personal form, they worship personal form also. Just that they aspire for the impersonal Brahmajyoti. But they don't reject the personal form of the Lord.
They are more attracted to the
Brahmajyoti. Because they don't have sufficient sukriti to understand the glorious destination of spiritual existence in the spiritual world. Therefore, they are aspiring for Brahmajyoti.
They don't fall down from Brahmajyoti, they fall somewhere.
I mean, they don't, if they choose to, they can come back. They will not be forced against their wishes to stay there. If they want, they can come back. But it's not like Swarga, where Shine Punya Marte Lokam Vishanti. After the punya is over, he will be kicked out. Even though, can I get one day extension, he will not get. But in Brahmajyoti, it's not like that.
They can stay as long as they wish.
Yeah.
There is lack of activity.
See, lack of activity, we have to understand. Many times people say, Nahi kaschit shanamapi jatu tishtat yakarma krit. Karyate hi avashak karma sarva prakriti jair gunaihi. But actually, if you see what that verse says, it says, Nahi kaschit shanamapi, even for a moment, it is not possible. Jatu tishtati akarmakrit, it is not possible for a living entity to do without, to stay without doing anything even for a moment. Why? Karyate hi avashah karma. He will be helplessly be pushed to act. Who is going to push him to act? Prakriti jair gunaihi. The gunas of prakriti will push him to act. Now, for someone in Brahmajyoti, does he have gunas of prakriti? No. He is free from vasanas, right? So who is going to push him to act? So one may say, in the spiritual world also there is the person is free from material vasanas. Who is pushing him to act? Love for Krishna is present in what form? Spiritual vasanas. Correct? So, in the material world, action is inspired by material vasanas. The spiritual world, actions are inspired by spiritual vasanas. In Brahmajyoti, there are neither material nor spiritual vasanas. So, there is no activity. So, if there is an impetus to perform activity, but there is no scope for performing it, then there is dissatisfaction. But if there is no impetus to perform activity, and there is no scope for performing activity, there is no dissatisfaction. In the sense, the level of satisfaction and happiness that one experiences in the spiritual world is trillion times, quadrillion times higher than the bliss experienced by a person existing in Brahmajyoti. But having said that, the bliss of existing in Brahmajyoti is still a million times greater than the highest bliss that one can experience in any part of the material world. Because there is absolutely no material distress at all. So, therefore, generally they stay there. Sometimes, but if they choose to come back, they can come back also.
What is further? How they progress further?
If someone swarga apavarga narakesha vituljartha darshina, if some devotee goes there and preaches, then he may get inspired. Yeah, sometimes it is mentioned. Lord Shiva goes there.
Generally hear that Brahman, only Sat aspect of the Lord is revealed, Paramatma Sat and Chit, and Bhagavan Satchidan Ananda. But although in Brahman there is happiness, so those two...
But that Ananda and Chit that is mentioned is Krishna's Samvidan Hladini potency. Krishna's Samvidan Hladini potency is not there in Brahmajyoti, because that Samvid potency indicates the identification of the living entity in his relationship with Krishna, and that Hladini indicates that experience of joy of that relationship with Krishna. That is not there in Brahmajyoti.
There must be surely some knowledge and happiness. Which kind of happiness?
But that is Brahmananda. They call it Brahmananda, we call it Brahma Sukha. So, but definitely some kind of happiness is there, because that kind of happiness is there in the material world also. So if you say that the Brahmajyoti is devoid of even that happiness which is available in the material world, then why is someone even aspiring to go there? So that Hladini, Krishna's Hladini potency experience of that is not there in Brahmajyoti. But still, a much inferior form of happiness is experienced. That is why so many people are aspiring for it. That is why the Goswamis, they are called Kaivalya Nistarakau. Prabhupada translates that in a very interesting way. So they are there to save the living entities from the jaws of liberation. Like that. So matlab, from the jaws of liberation means it's something very very lucrative actually. Because first thing, there is no service. You don't have to serve. There is no need for Adi Gopal Prabhu there. I mean, in his role as you know, manager, so, and there is no service and there is no material misery. How does that sound? That sounds very, very, very lucrative, because our experience of service in the material world is very poor, and miseries, our experience of misery is also very poor. And you say that in the Brahma Jyoti there is no misery, there is no service. That's quite interesting. And anyway, what do we know about Ladini, Samvit and all those things? Do we have an experience of that? But material misery? Yes. Material service? Yes. That is not there. And there is bliss. But definitely people will choose. So therefore, our acharyas have always condemned it. Bhagavatam condemns it. Not just our acharyas. Bhagavatam condemns it. Like that. Jnana Yoga. Yeah. If they don't get the fact that they are still practicing their Brahmavad indicates that they have not yet received the pure devotional seed.
And if one gets...
Not that a Brahmavadi is disqualified from receiving the pure devotional seed. Not like that.
And if can practitioner of pure bhakti, he may at some point of time get this aspiration of merging in Brahma Jyoti?
Yeah, Asat Sangha.
Okay.
Asat Sangha can change everything. The whole equation can change with Asat Sangha. Okay.
It's over, right? Purport is over?
Oh, Yenya Aravindaksha, you are reading the meaning, but it's not over, you can complete.
Because of ignorance, one speculatively thinks himself liberated from material contamination, although actually he is not. Therefore, even if one rises to Brahma Jnana, understanding of Brahman, one nevertheless falls down because of not taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. Nonetheless, jnanis at least know what is sinful and what is pious, and they very cautiously act according to the injunctions of the Shastras.
So is Prabhupada is here just putting both the Mayavadis and Jnana Yogis into one pack and then just commenting. But there is a difference. But the point is, he is going to reject Jnana Yoga also. So it doesn't really matter. If it is a process, if it is a chapter like Kapila Dev's teachings where he is actually explaining Jnana Yoga, then there probably that does not give a scope for putting both of them in the same category. But here, anyway, eventually Shukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj are going to reject Jnana Yoga also. So therefore, Prabhupada is putting them also in the category of like Mayavadi. So, Yenya Aravindaksha is not talking about a Jnana Yogi. That's what you have to understand. It is talking about a Mayavadi. Yenya Aravindaksha verse is not talking about a Jnana Yogi. A Jnana Yogi does not fall in that category. Okay, let's continue. Tapasa brahmacharyena shamena cha damena cha jagena satya shauchabhyam yamena niyamena va dehavad buddhijam dhira dharma gya shraddayan vitaha kshipantyagam mahadapi venu gulmam ivanalaha. So here tapasa, so is what are those things? Because the previous verse he mentioned that evam niyamakrit rajan shanaihi kshemaya kalpate. One who follows the rules gradually becomes qualified for jnana. So what are those rules? Tapasa, tapasya, brahmacharyena, by avoiding association with women, shamena, controlling the mind, damena, controlling the senses, tyagena, by giving in charity, satya by following truthfulness, shauchabhyam cleanliness, yamena niyamena the do's and don'ts of yoga. Yamas like non-violence and niyamas like japa. Deha vag, then he says the wise men dhira who are dharmakya, knowers of dharma, shraddhayanvitaha, filled with faith, kshipanti agam mahadapi, they destroy even great sin. Where did the sin come from? Deha vag buddhijam, arising from body, words and intelligence. Venu gulmam iva analaha. Analaha is here, it refers to a forest fire. The generic meaning is fire, because Venu gulmam comes. You know, the Venu gulma is a bamboo forest. Generally forest fire only burns such bamboos. So just like forest fire burns bamboos, in the same way, by practice of this niyama, which leads to jnana, one destroys sins. Tapasa brahmacharyena shamena cha tamena cha. Nene, before reaching, it makes him qualified to reach the stage of jnana. Which one? Oh, 13th chapter.
What is that?
Amanitvam, anambitvam, ahimsa, kshantira, arjavam. Similar. But of course, the main item there is what is the bhakti ravya bicharini? Mahicha ananya yogena bhakti ravya bicharini. That is the main item there. Of course, this also must include that item also. Yeah.
These are the preliminary limbs of Jnana Yoga.
Preliminary limbs of Jnana Yoga means the do's and don'ts that one has to practice while one is practicing Nishkama Karma Yoga in order to become qualified for Jnana. That's what it means. Two verses elaborate on this. Tapasa means absence of enjoyment. Brahmacharyena means not associating with women. Shamena means by controlling the mind as much as possible. Damena means controlling the external senses. Tyagena means by charity. Yamena means by non-violence and other restrictions. Niyamena means japa and other injunctions. Of course, this japa is not necessarily Hare Krishna japa, Mahamantra japa. It must be some particular mantras meditating on that. Okay, someone can read the purport.
Tapaha is explained in the Smriti Shastra as follows.
Keep the mic near.
Manasas Chendriyana Cha Aikagriyam Paramam Tapaha. Complete control of the mind and senses and their complete concentration on one kind of activity is called Tapaha. Our Krishna consciousness movement is teaching people how to concentrate the mind on devotional service. This is called first class Tapaha. Brahmacharya, the life of celibacy has 8 aspects. One should not think of women, speak about sex life, dally with women, look lustfully at women, talk intimately with women, or decide to engage in sexual intercourse. Nor should one endeavor for sex life or engage in sex life.
So these are the 8 aspects of gradually more and more severe digressions from the principles of Brahmacharya. So it starts with thinking and then speaking and then dallying and then looking lustfully and then talking intimately and deciding to engage in sexual intercourse and endeavor for sex life and then eventually engage. All of that are more and more severe digressions from the principles of celibacy.
One should not even think of a woman or look at them, to say nothing of talking with them. This is called first class brahmacharya.
If a brahmachari or sannyasi talks with a woman in a secluded place, naturally there will be possibility of sex life without anyone's knowledge.
Not that when they are talking, they are already thinking of engaging subsequently in the act itself. But over a period of time when it continues, then eventually without their knowledge, they develop the desire to engage in that way.
Therefore, complete brahmachari practices just the opposite. If one is a perfect brahmachari, he can very easily control the mind and senses, give charity, speak truthfully, and so forth. To begin, however, one must control the tongue.
The proof for this is actually Ajamil, who, because of getting attached, actually lost all the other, the ability to speak truth, the ability to control mind and senses, the ability to give in charity, everything, or the desire also. Everything was lost.
To begin, however, one must control the tongue and the process of eating.
Vacho Vegam and Jihva Vegam.
In the Bhakti Marg, the path of devotional service, one must strictly follow the regulative principles by first controlling the tongue. Sevan Mukhe Hi Jihva Dav Swayam Eva Swarati Adha. The tongue, jivha, can be controlled if one chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, does not speak of any subjects other than those concerning Krishna, and does not taste anything not offered to Krishna. If one can control the tongue in this way, brahmacharya and other purifying processes will automatically follow.
So, we were discussing the other day that asat trishna means hankering for bhukti, mukti, siddhi and all of that. He says asat trishna, one can overcome asat trishna by following the second verse of NOI. Adhyahara prayasascha prajalpo niyamagraha janasangascha laulyamcha. Because these six are the means by which unfavorable material impressions enter that person, and it will push him towards give him the desires for asat trishna. So he says by very carefully following the second verse of NOI, he says one can overcome asat trishna, and one can overcome aparad by following the first verse, he says. So if you krodha vegam, vacho vegam, manasa vegam, you control all of that, aparad will be aparad can be controlled. And then he says hridaya daurbalyam can be overcome by following the fourth verse. Radati pratigrinnati guhyamakyati vrichati. And the fourth is tattva vibrama can be overcome by taking shelter of shastras and guru. He says this way one can overcome tattva vibrama. The process of hearing and assimilating, he says. Hearing, yeah, taking shelter of shastras and guru. So by that one can overcome tattva vibrama. So in this way, if one follows these principles, then one will be anartha free. Because these are the four sources of anarthas. So by following these principles, one can overcome anarthas. Like that. Yeah, go ahead.
If one can control the tongue in this way, brahmacharya and other purifying processes will automatically follow. It will be explained in the next verse that the path of devotional service is completely perfect and is therefore superior to the path of fruitive activities and the path of knowledge. Quoting from the Vedas, Srila Viraghava Acharya explains that austerity involves observing fasts as fully as possible.
Tapasa anashakena.
Srila Rupa Goswami has also advised...
Anashakena means not eating.
Srila Rupa Goswami has also advised that atyahara, too much eating, is an impediment to advancement in spiritual life. Also in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Yukta ara viharasya, yukta cheshtasya karmasu, yukta swapnava bodhasya, yogo bhavati dukha.
This is your sadhana chart sutra.
He who is temperate in his habits of eating, sleeping, working and recreation can mitigate all material pains by practicing the yoga system. In text 14, the word dhiraha, meaning those who are undisturbed under all circumstances, is very significant. Krishna tells Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, Matrasparshastu Kaunteya Shitoshna Sukadukkada Agamapayano Nityas Tamsatikshva Swabharata. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O sign of Bharat, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. In material life, there are many disturbances, adhyatmik, adhidaivik and adhibhautik. One who has learned to tolerate these disturbances under all circumstances is called dhira.
Okay. So, Prabhupada has explained the meanings of these practices that has been mentioned here in this verse. So, we'll pause here. Time. So next month when we come together, we will see the actual suggestion, that recommendation that is going to satisfy Parikshit Maharaj. Kechit Kevalaya Bhaktya Vasudeva Parayana. That we'll discuss this next visit. Thank you very much for your patient listening. It was a great pleasure discussing, and it was a much more greater pleasure attending your presentations. I wish every time we should have some presentations. So, of course, fifth canto is over. Fifth canto presentation is remaining. Fifth, sixth is together. Okay. So, I think most of you will present from sixth canto only. Anyway, so and as usual, Bhajan Sandhya was also very wonderful. So next month we are meeting on I think 21, 22, then 24, 25, like that. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Yeah.